This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier, thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. Because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello and welcome to the Rest is Football question and answer episode with me, Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer and Micah Richards. Thank you once again for your questions. We've got some absolute crackers this week, so I'm not going to mess around too long. Let's get straight on it. One for you, Alan, really, for a start, from Liam Stevenson. Being a lifelong Newcastle fan, I'm torn by the prospect of the rumours the owners are looking to build a new stadium. The history of St James's Park versus a new 70, 80,000 seater stadium. Keen to hear Alan's thoughts on this.
Oh, I think one of the best things about St James's Park is its position, that it's so close to the city centre. So whether they were going to extend it, fine. But if they were going to build a new one, I think it has to be pretty much next door or really close, because I think that's why we generate such a great atmosphere. It's so iconic, and it's in the city centre. So if it is going to be a new stadium, then it has to be pretty much next door to where it is, or certainly not far away.
Should they or should they not get rid of the slope?
I would have said yes when I was fucking backpedaling up when I was trying to chase back when I was playing. But it is... It is a hell of a slope there at St James's Park, isn't it? Yeah.
What do you think, Micah?
Yes, get rid of that slope. Ridiculous
slope. It's funny as football fans, though. I think when the news comes that you're going to get a new stadium, you always think, oh, no, I love this place. And it's like with Filbert Street, which was a very tired, small old ground. Everyone's, oh, we're leaving Filbert Street. And then you end up in this nice stadium. Once you get used to it, you go, oh, this is so much better. You know, it's happened obviously with Arsenal and Tottenham and Manchester City, a prime example, going from Main Road to obviously where they had the Commonwealth Games in Manchester.
Can't you refurbish it, Al? Take out the old and put in some new?
I do think that the proximity is really, really important, with it being in the town, in the right there. And I think that helps generate a great atmosphere. So if it is going to be moved, then it has to be really, really close to where it is. But I don't see, that's the other option as well, Micah, is to update it all.
They do get tired, though, these old grounds, don't they? And you take Old Trafford, for example. I remember when I played, I thought, oh, what a place to play football. Now you go there and it's kind of... It's not that impressive anymore, is it, in terms of an actual stadium? I think even Jim Ratcliffe, when he came in, didn't he, said one of the things that needs to happen here is a club like Manchester United should have we've seen it happen at big clubs like the Real Madrid. They've just recently done the Bernabeu. Barcelona are now currently doing the Camp Nou. There's some amazing stadiums across Europe. Anyway, we move on to Steve Ethorn. Probably one for you, this Micah. Funny enough, it reminds me of Monday's episode because he says, "Hi all, loving the podcast, thank you. Why do you think so many teams are having so many injury problems? Is it the extra length of games or has training changed? As a Leeds fan, hoping it's Leeds and Leicester for a quick return to the Premier League, although it's a lot more fun winning and a lot more games." Yeah, so he had 2 points there. And I'll agree with him, Leicester and Leeds. Sorry, Ipswich fans. I'll agree if it were just Leicester and Ipswich as well, or Leicester and Southampton, or Leicester and anyone. But in terms of, we do seem to be getting a lot of injuries. I think we've kind of talked about this a little bit before, but you know, we've always played a lot of football, so whether it's that or not, I don't know. With medical technology now and stuff, they can assess players better, so they perhaps can work out when you're going to get injured a little bit. But I always wonder whether it might be because the playing surfaces now, aren't they? Because they're all a mixture of grass and kind of synthetic stuff, aren't they? So I wonder whether that firmness of the ground and the fact that you can sprint properly, because when I played, it's quite hard to pull a hamstring when you're running through mud. So you don't go quickly enough to do it. So I wonder whether that's got anything to do with it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I don't want to seem like, oh, back in your day, the game was a lot slower, but the intensity is a lot harder now.
No,
the,
it's not. It wasn't slower.
The input that, so I think when I was around 18, 19, the top sprinter, which was normally, or distance covered, would be James Milner, would be around 12K, 11K. But now they're getting up to 13K, but with higher intensity as well. So if you do that, you're going to get more injuries coincided with the amount of games you have to play. But the only argument against it, the squads are a lot bigger now. So you should be able to utilize your squad a little bit better. So I think there's arguments for both, but I definitely think the game has got a lot quicker.
I would chuck something at you, and I don't know, not, but you've got, games are a lot longer now. You're playing for 10 or 15 minutes almost every game. And what is happening more now is the stop-start for players. Players are hanging around more in a game, i.e. waiting for a decision. I don't know, substitutes. There's more now than there's ever been. So when you put all that together, maybe that's one of the reasons. I don't know, I'm just chucking it out there.
Yeah, we're not scientists, but who knows? Prabhu Weerasinghe asks, out of the retired football pundits, who would be the fittest? I presume he means in terms of actual fitness rather than the way they look. my vote, he says, would go to Clarence Seedorf, but I think Thierry Henry would give it a good go.
Oh, yeah. Well, should we start with BBC first?
Well, ain't going to be me. I'm 63, but I'm not a pundit either. So.
We'll just go broadcasters. Let's start with BBC.
Yeah.
Gaz, you're in very good shape for your age, aren't you?
And what do you mean for my age? Can't you just say you are in very good shape?
He means you're an ageist. Old fucker.
I know what he means.
Jermaine Jenas is... He's aging quite well, isn't he? He's in the gym all the time.
You're going to bring this round to yourself in the end. I know you are.
He's getting there, isn't he? Oh, he wants us to see him. I get you spend a bit of time in the gym.
Alan, how old are you?
53.
Three? You're looking very good for a 53-year-old. I've seen you in the gym, though. You're more of a jogger on. I've seen you on the treadmill. Could go a little bit quicker, but yeah. Danny Murphy.
Nah.
He's miles off the pace.
Who else we got?
Ashley Williams is in good nick.
Ashley looks
younger.
In good shape. But he's very recently retired. It's going to favour the more recently retired, this one.
Of course,
he's
got big beaks. Wow. Yeah.
You live in the gym, don't you?
Specimen.
What about the Sky Mob? Who's fittest? Neville or Carragher?
I wouldn't say Neville.
Roy Keane. Is Roy Keane looks in
Roy Keane's in good nick. But I think he's more dog walking. He takes his dogs out, doesn't he, every day. I don't think he goes to the gym that much.
So do I, but he's still getting the gym a bit.
Cara's good with the boxing.
Yeah.
But Thierry Henry. I did a session with Thierry Henry in Vegas, and I thought I was fit.
What a gym session.
Yeah.
Was this before or after your night out? Before, I hope.
During. No, I'm joking. It's a joke, people. It's a joke. But I'd say Thierry Henry. Different level. Different level of fitness.
William Gibson. This is quite a long one, but I think it's quite interesting. Hi, Gary, Alan and Micah. As someone who is short-sighted and therefore needs to wear contact lenses to play football, I have always wondered how many professional footballers also have poor eyesight, noting that both Gary and Micah often wear their glasses on screen. Did either of you struggle to see on the pitch to the extent that you needed to wear contact lenses to play, or did any of your former teammates spend a couple of minutes before every game putting contact lenses in? If so, did they ever fall out during the game, leaving them helplessly wandering around the pitch unable to see? My eyesight was always pretty good until I got older and needed them for reading, and Alan's getting that. There now. I've seen him whack on the glasses occasionally for reading. Micah, you're did you wear contacts, didn't you?
No, I didn't play? Wear contacts. Didn't? I needed to wear contacts.
It explains a lot.
I'm not exaggerating, I swear. I could only see the ball when it was about 5 or 10 yards in front of me. I just had to sort of guess.
What?
I'm honestly, I'm not
exaggerating. Made so many fucking mistakes.
Micah, you could have been like the greatest defender of all time if you could see.
What the physio said to me, fucking hell, if you could actually see, you'd be fucking Beckenbauer.
Why do you get contacts?
I couldn't wear them. They used to hurt my eyes.
Oh, bless you.
I know. So, yeah, I could only see the ball 5 or 10 yards. So I used to just anticipate where the ball's going to be. I used to take my position off where the striker was going to be rather than where the ball is.
Guys, you know that story I tell about Chris Nicol in the Southampton dressing room? When we had an absolute shocker and he comes at the end of the game and he goes around the whole dressing room. Shit, shit, shit. And he gets to Tim Flowers, our goalkeeper. Yeah. He says, get your fucking eyes tested.
That reminds me, actually, that reminds me of a player that I did play with, which always used to worry me I always used to see him, he'd go in the bathroom and then he's putting his contact lenses in the game. Eric Torsved, Tottenham's goalkeeper. And I used to think, good God, it always worried me, but he put contact lenses in to see. But it worked. He was a very good goalkeeper, actually. And on that note, let's take a little break.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Want to be more active this summer? Sierra helps you save on everything from swimsuits to stand-up paddle boards, tennis rackets to fishing tackle. And if that doesn't float your boat, we also have pool floats. Sierra, let's get moving. To your local store, like now. Go!
Welcome back to the Rest is football question and answer episode with Micah Richards, Alan Shearer, and me, Gary Lineker. We'll crack on so we can get through as many as we possibly can. Anthony Fernandez asks, were there any players you played with that weren't necessarily the biggest, but were exceptional headers of the ball? I'd say me. He mentions Diogo Jota, which is a good shout.
Speedo had the best leap I've seen.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, I don't know what he was. Was he maybe 6 foot just under, I guess? Yeah. But he had, his leap and his timing was unbelievable.
Cristiano Ronaldo could leap, couldn't he? Cool, blimey.
Yeah.
Still can.
Yeah. I would say Wayne Rooney, for a little lad. What is he, 5'9", 5'10"? He could leap. When he got up there, he could leap. I'd go Wazza on that one.
It's all about timing.
Yeah, have you seen Osimhen? I mean, I know he's big anyway, but boy, he can spring.
He can spring, yeah.
Yeah, he really can. Simon Simmons, probably more of a question for Gary, okay? But my dad is of similar age to you and loves football. However, he always says that he doesn't understand when people talk about formations nowadays. Was there ever talk about formations when you were playing? Or is the current obsession with playing systems more of a modern phenomenon? Well, I think Alan also, if you don't mind, Simon, is not that far behind me age-wise. I think there's always been formations in football, hasn't there? Even way before even I played, you know, you used to talk about we mentioned it on here before, about the WM formation. Then, you know, it was mostly, I think, 4-4-2 in my time. Most teams played that way. But around the world, I played against lots of different kinds of football, whether, you know, sweepers, three at the back, one up front, one just behind, all sorts of... It's always been the case, hasn't it, Alan?
Yep. Terry Venables did it. What, the Christmas tree thing? That was year 96. So, yeah, they've been around.
I think what we do have now, of course, is there's just much more discussion on football tactics, probably on television, radio, podcasts, etc. So whereas back in our day, you'd read a little bit in a newspaper where they probably wouldn't talk too much about the tactical formations and stuff, and there wasn't that much punditry on television. Ian Smith. Looking at the season Kai Havertz is now having and him popping up with another big goal at the weekend, how do players turn it around? Is it all down to the player or is it the manager that sparks the change?
Speaking about Kai Havertz, what about his dive?
Oh, yes. We didn't talk about that at the weekend, did we?
That's
well, it
why
was
we
a dive,
it
wasn't it? It was definitely a dive. He'd already had a yellow card. Of course, that is a yellow card offence, diving, but
very lucky.
I don't think the referee could see it, and VAR obviously can't intervene if it's just a yellow card decision.
Yeah, he got away with one.
He did. He did, and then scored the winning goal, of course. Yeah. But what do we think? How do you turn it around if it's not going well?
Manager, isn't it? I think it's, firstly, it's your manager who believes in you, gives you we mentioned that word trust a lot, don't we? And then it just comes from within. It should always come first, do the best and train hard and try to improve your game. But if you don't have the trust from your manager, you're never going to get to the levels that you want to. So it's a bit of both, but when you've got a manager who believes in you, it makes such a difference.
Yep, I wouldn't disagree with that. L. Scotto asks for Micah. Imagine playing against a strike partnership of Lineker and Shearer. What would your game plan be and how do you think you would cope? A helpful tip maybe, but my suggestion will to go to an old school and snap them early and show them who's boss. I beg your pardon? Snappers? He wouldn't get
Micah
close enough.
Micah couldn't cope with us, guys.
Well, hold on. I had a couple of minutes against Al and he did nothing. Diddly squat. He didn't come near me. Did he get subbed off in that game as well? Something like that.
Honestly, I wish I'd have played against you a bit longer.
I would have battered you.
I would have taken you every blade of grass on the pitch and ran you fucking ragged.
Right, Micah. This leads me on to a next question. And I'd like you to remember when you answer what Alan has just said about you.
Okay.
Mike Merton. Big Meeks. Sell, buy and bench. Harry Kane, Alan Shearer, Gary Lineker.
Oh, come on, Meeks, come on.
Buy, sell, bench.
Oh, what a great question that is. Sell, buy, bench.
Ooh. Mr. Creosote's going to have to get on.
He's thinking about his answer. Any danger, Micah?
Get some creosote, will you? Fucking up. Okay. Because I've never seen Gaz play, we're selling Gaz. See you later. Touche. All the records you've broken up. Yeah, I mean, they're in my a distant memory, aren't they? They're history. So let's go to modern day players. Kane, a bit more versatile, a bit more all-rounded. Lovely striker, lovely technique. But I'm going to put him on the bench.
Got to. Great decision. Great decision.
Alan Shearer, the Geordie boys. We're buying him, yes.
You know class when you see class.
Look at God.
You absolute wanker.
Are you all right there, Gaz?
She's not speaking to you. Oh, dear.
I've never seen you play.
We didn't see him, did we? I've still not seen the video footage. Just records, just numbers I've seen. That's what I've seen.
If you'd have seen me play, you'd be buying me all over. No question at all. Jack Smith. Hi, Gary. Spurs fan Jack here. Wondering who was the toughest person to score or defend against? Love the podcast. Listen while I do the paper round. Paper round's still a thing. Fantastic. Toughest to play against? I went from my time two. I'll go Des Walker and Paul McGrath.
Paul McGrath was a good player.
He was at Villa. I struggled against him. Very good.
Very good, yeah.
You, Alan?
Tony Adams. Yeah, Tony Adams for me it was, definitely. Yap Stam was tough as well.
I bet he was, yeah. Micah, toughest strikers to play against?
Ooh, Thierry Henry, Drogba.
Yeah, sounds good. Matt Everett. It's often said that some players struggle to adapt to the Premier League and that it's the hardest league. In your professional opinion, why is this? And if it's true, which players from other leagues would fit right in if they got a move? I think it's one of the most physical leagues in the world, isn't it? And we still play at a high pace now. But I don't think football varies so much now, certainly across the big leagues in Europe. You know, the Spanish league, yes, they kind of play a more possession-based football. But German football's pretty energetic and dynamic. So is English football too. So I think that's something we probably say a lot here. But I think some players will struggle to adapt in any league they go to.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt this is the most physical, the Premier League. It is the quickest. But you also got to remember, footballers are human, you know. It's like, if it doesn't... You've got things behind the scene. You've got families that you've got to settle and everything else. And so it's not as simple as, all right, I'm just going to turn up, I'm going to sign, and I'm going to go out and play. There's so many different factors to actually playing well.
But if you're the best, if you look at someone like Kylian Mbappe,
yeah,
if he came to the Premier League, he would fit in. He does it in French league.
I mean, so many players have come here and fit perfectly well, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, loads of them. Really good players. Kevin Johnson, two parts. Why don't all or nearly all offensively minded players learn to use their weaker foot? And why don't coaches force players to learn? The advantages of being able to shoot and pass with either foot seem so huge and the cost so low that this mystifies me. Why isn't this, like fitness, a minimum requirement? Well, I think all players do work on the weaker foot, don't they? I certainly did, but some players, you know, it's like some people can use two hands quite well and you can practice as much as you like with the other hand, but it might never be quite as good as your natural hand. Same thing, isn't it?
You won't remember a guy who I'm going to mention, Russell Osman, Micah. Gary will know him.
I know. He was
an unbelievable... You couldn't tell left foot or right foot when I was at Southampton as a youngster. He used to spray it around with either foot. He was one of the best I've seen. He was incredible.
There's a lot of players actually perfectly two-footed, but yeah, I think you do work at it, don't you?
You do
work at it, but I mean, the question I asked, you've got Messi, who was so one-footed, and Maradona, who was so one-footed, the best players ever. So I don't think it's too much of a problem, is it? It's just what you're used to, what you practice on. every single day, don't you?
Andy Bremer, the German fullback, took a penalty in the World Cup semi-final with one foot and then in the final with the other foot.
That is ridiculous. Yes. Quite something.
I wouldn't have fancied doing that with my left foot.
That is a two-footed person. Right, let's have one more question. David Chapalau. I saw Mourinho and R9, that's Brazilian Ronaldo, for those that don't know, congratulating Joshua on his recent win. Anthony Joshua, I presume. The Americans I saw, who are boxing fans, had no idea who they were. Have you ever been in a situation where you were completely blanked and nobody knew who you were? Do you actually like that at times? Thank you from Taiwan. Ooh, a listener in Taiwan. It's quite nice when nobody knows you, isn't it? I got properly blanked by Bob Geldof once.
Did you?
Yeah, it was the GQ Awards, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. And he came up and I went to say hello like that. And I put my arm out to shake his hand. And he just looked like straight through me and then saw someone he did recognise just behind me and left me hanging. Left me hanging! Oh, cheers, Bob. Yeah. Have you had any?
I had one with Lewis Hamilton. So we was doing something with Sky and Mercedes. And basically what we planned, it was around COVID time that I could go follow his journey, who's someone who knows nothing about F1, just to see behind the scenes. But then we do the road trips with League of Their Own, don't we? And the team we're doing our sort of our show with is Red Bull. And obviously they're massive rivals. So like, I know him, he knows me, you know, he said hello. I was following him around. So we're in, I think it was in Singapore. So literally he's coming down, you know, the walk in F1 and all that, and everyone's coming down, they've got all the paps taking photos and whatnot. And I'm stood there in all my Red Bull gear, and he's looked at me, and I've looked at him, and I've got like to say, and he just blanked me. I've never felt so little in all my life.
Quite right as well, wearing Red Bull.
Well, I mean, I was doing it for the show. I wasn't doing it for anything else.
Well, it's the end of a beautiful friendship, wasn't it then, Mike? Ooh, what a shame.
Not spoken to him since.
You better get a Ferrari suit on for next
year. Oh, yes. I'm a Ferrari man now.
Aren't we all? On that note, that's it for our question and answer episode. We'll see you later in the week. But goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me. Goodbye from me.